As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
Good morning. It's time to get up. Wakey, wakey, eggs and bakey. It's time to get up! Wake up, bitch! Time to get up!
Good morning, sweet world, and welcome to the No Dunks Podcast on the Athletic Network. It's Monday, April 29th, 2024. I'm J.E. Skeets here in the Classic Factory, and alongside me, as always, Tess Mellis.
I hope it's a good morning, as you said, because after that, that's a little scary. Podcast listeners, this is for you.
Next to him, it's the bearded one, a top shot hot boy, Trey Kirby.
Ayo.
Ayo. And last but not least, over yonder, making the magic happen, super producer JD.
Hello.
There he is, and here we are. We're going to touch on all eight playoff series today. We've decided to break them up by conferences. So stick around if you want to hear us talk about Jalen Brunson's masterpiece there in Philly. But let's start with the West. Let's go west, young men, and we will begin with a series that was expected to be one of the more competitive series in the first round, but the Wolves became the first team to punch their ticket to the conference semifinals by completing a sweep of the Suns on Sunday night. Booker Durant doing a whole lot of scoring.
Yeah, that was good.
But in the end, Karl-Anthony Towns doing his part for the Wolves, and then Ant take over with a 40-point game from this guy. A superstar already, it feels like, and they get it done, sweeping the Suns. And Vogel, is he gone? What do they do with that roster? You know, we can get into that, but let's talk about the game and give some love here to Ant and Cat and the Wolves. Yeah,
it is strange that we saw the best performance from the Phoenix Suns right before they got swept, right at the end. This was the best fourth quarter game. Finally, we saw a close one that went down to the wire, because that didn't happen the first three games. Yeah. And then the Timberwolves just sealed it, because it looked like the Suns had a chance going into the fourth quarter, but then the Timberwolves got hot the first almost 5 minutes. They didn't miss a basket. And Anthony Edwards obviously showing up, waking up. Beautiful block against Devin Booker there. And then the way the Suns went out, it was almost like a little microcosm of their season, really, because you had the big two that you mentioned, Booker and Durant. Awesome performances. Booker shutting everybody up who says he can't play in a game where he's about to get eliminated. This is the first time he had a monster 49-point game, and Durant 33. But the other guy, Beal, was nowhere close to that. And with 2:30 left, this is a 2-point game. The Suns did a good thing, moving the ball around. It looked like the Suns that everybody talked about as potentially a good team, looking like, we just got it to share the ball a little bit. He went baseline with Karl-Anthony Towns underneath the hoop there. And he had the opportunity for a reverse layup. Towns, five fouls. He doesn't want to foul out. He just did that a few minutes prior, and he passed out and turned it over. It was a little Ben Simmons-like. He should have shot that ball. At the other end, Anthony Edwards with a boom dunk. We'll get to in a second. And then Beal turned it over again. And then the next possession, so basically three possessions in a row, he fouled out. So that's it. Done, said, and that's it for the entire season for the Phoenix Suns. It's pretty incredible. That is a bit of a microcosm. Their big three shrank a lot in this series. and they needed them to be huge. They did not, and Edwards was monstrous. How good he was, how efficient he was in that second half, scoring those 31 points off his 40. He was awesome because he did what he needed to do in the first half, passing everybody, six assists in this game, but then being the best player on the floor.
Yeah, 40 points for Ant, 9 boards, 6 assists, 13 of 23 from the field, 7 of 13 from deep, making shots all over the court. He had those blocks. I like the one at the very end of the game, even on Booker. He wasn't done blocking Devin Booker. And then, yeah, the huge dunk, which was a big 2 points there. I mean, put him up 4. It was still a game. It was like 2-14 when he threw that down, blowing by Beal, dunking, you know, sort of near on-ish his idol in Kevin Durant. And just what a game. And then it continues in the post-game press conference. You know, he's, I don't know what's better, his game or his post-game press conferences. I'm not sure with this guy. He can do it all. But what'd you think, TK?
This guy is the man.
He really is.
Absolute man. He is so much fun to watch. Obviously, the Timberwolves have a ton of belief in him. He sprained his ankle twice in this game, wearing the low AE1s, switches to the mid AE1s, and completely took over in the second half. Curious decision from Frank Vogel, I think, to go one-on-one in the second half against Anthony Edwards, because he saw that and his eyes lit up, just completely torched Bradley Beal. That dunk for me was a show your kids. Tell them about the dinner table. This one looks like a Michael Jordan dunk. Yeah. Come and have a look at it. 6 for 7 in the fourth quarter for Anthony Edwards. Reminded me of LeBron taking over against the Pistons a million years ago when he scored 25 of their last 27. I think the only miss he had in the fourth quarter was a dunk. He went for a two-handed dunk and just jumped too high and missed it. That was awesome. And then, like you're saying, in the post-game press conferences, he's talking trash. And also, he's completely bigging up Karl Anthony Towns. He has said the entire season, Cat's our best player. Getting him back, this is the best thing that can happen to us. We don't win the game yesterday without Cat. And that's true. 28-10 for Karl Anthony Towns. He had an awesome series in this one. Anytime he had to be the only big man out there alongside Naz Reid, didn't matter. He was good enough defensively. Still had dumb fouls because it's Towns mode, but overcame it. Played a great, great series. This was a fun game to watch, and it felt like a torch had been passed from the old guys, born in the 1980s, to all these 90s and 2000s guys on the Timberwolves, because the Timberwolves look bigger and faster. Mm-hmm. That's hard to do when you're a bigger team.
Yeah, the first series win for the Timberwolves since 2004. Mm-hmm. It's been a very long time, 20 years since they won a playoff series, and they do it, you know, with the sweep here on a good team, have a lot of flaws on that Phoenix Suns team, and it fell apart, obviously. But this was a team that still won a lot of games, and the Wolves, yeah, they really punked them this entire series. That was a part. Like, this was a close game.
The
a lot
only
of those
one.
Other ones weren't. Yeah, they're pretty comfortable.
There's only one.
And in game, game four, Rudy got into foul trouble, and that did allow the Suns to sort of lean into a little bit more, going small. Even Vogel was trying things. But the problem was Cat then took advantage. I mean, he's a big dude still, too. And he had that great game, like you said. Felt like when the Wolves needed a bucket there at times, he would always go to Cat, and he came through. I can't think of a guy that's happier, though, to, you want to talk about passing the torch, to being, like, the number one guy in a team that Cat was there for years in Minnesota, to just hand it over to Ant and be completely fine with it. And as he should, he's better in this role. And Ant as, like, your main guy, your dog. And this maybe works. They flourish with this 1-2 sort of system here. But what a game. What a series from Minnesota. Made me look silly, obviously, taking Phoenix. A lot of people took Phoenix. We thought it'd be a close series, like I said. And in the end, they took care of business.
Yeah, an awesome first playoff series win here for Anthony Edwards, because he's playing against the guy that he idolized as a kid. He's played against Kevin Durant. He's talking trash to him multiple times. And then that dunk at the end of this game was Kevin Durant. Yeah, he got out of the way, but the poster still has Kevin Durant in it. And so how cool is that? To finish it off like that, and then, yeah, going into the post game, puts on his Braves hat because he's from Georgia, looking like Trey Kirby out there with his Braves hat, the fitted...
Yes, definitely.
The fitted cap. Yeah, that's who he's idolizing. When I say idolizing, I mean Trey Kirby. But yeah, he's wearing the A. Obviously, extremely, extremely comfortable playing with all these guys. The difference is the Phoenix Suns have guys who are willing to scrap. I'm sorry. The Wolves have guys who are willing to scrap and fight besides Anthony Edwards and Karl Anthony Towns. And the Phoenix Suns obviously don't, and they're calling each other out a little bit, you know, in the series. Even Eric Gordon, kind of coming off the bench, basically saying, like, we don't have the guys. We don't have the guys that we need to have to win. And they also don't have the effort. And I was just shocked to hear. I didn't want to mention this Bradley Beal line that he said after going down 3-0. But you have to. When he says, I've never been swept in my life, I'll be damned if that happens. To go out like that, where he was literally just turning the ball over, then fouled out and just ran to the bench. It doesn't get worse than that.
No.
I mean, we can...
Yeah. Well, then he... what do you think of him brushing away Frank Vogel's hand while he was going to the bench? Yeah. He wanted nothing to do with that either. They're getting a little passive-aggressive there at the end.
That's who they're going to blame, but come
yes,
on.
Yes, they are.
Come on.
Vogel.
Yeah. There's nobody else to blame with the way they're constructed.
Well, yeah.
It's just... It's very, very difficult to do it to anybody else. Who are they going to blame? Durant? Beal? Booker? I mean... that's very difficult.
The Suns will enter the offseason with $206 million in salary, the biggest payroll of any team, and over the next two seasons, $312 million alone committed to Booker, Durant, and Beal. If that's going to be the case, you're going to hope you win at least a playoff game, let alone a series or two. Yeah, Ziller was writing about it. Coaches get paid in this league, unfortunately, to take the fall. So it will likely be Vogel. We'll see here. I mean, he was sort of saying, nah, I got the support of Matt Ishbia. You know, you hear that all the time, though. And then, of course, you're axed 2 days later. But yeah, you're not trading Beal. Unlikely, at least. Well, he's got a no-trade clause. So.
Who wants him?
And who wants him? You're right. You're likely not trading Kevin Durant and Devin Booker unless they want to be traded from the situation. No one else on the roster is going to, you know, warrant anything. There's no demand for any of these other guys, be it Nurk or O'Neal or whatever. So
I think they got to sign O'Neal too, right?
Yeah, right.
They just signed Grayson Allen to a huge deal.
And they have zero draft picks. You're right, Tess. They have, what can they do?
Don't they have the number 22 pick this season?
Okay. Yeah, I'm sure that'll be a game changer.
They don't have much to trade.
They have that, and then what? Maybe they can trade something in 2031, which sounds like a fake year.
Yeah,
we won't be like here. Yeah, so they committed when they did the Beal move. Look, the Durant thing, I think a lot of teams do it. Ishbia, new owner, comes in. What? We can get Kevin Durant? Hell yeah, let's do it. Trade the farm or trade 90% of the farm. And then the Beal situation, yeah, we can get Bradley Beal. Oh my God, we'll be unstoppable. And again, we thought they would be offensively at least. Vogel had them like what? An average defensive team in the regular season.
Right in the middle.
But you kept bringing it up time and time again through the regular season, Trey. They never played together. Ever. It almost never happened. Someone was always banged up. And that's not an excuse. I'm not saying they would have beat the Minnesota Timberwolves if they had all played together, but maybe they have a better record. Maybe they're not even matched up against them. It was just bad all season. And Vogel will, if there's a fall guy, it'll be him. It has to be. Yeah.
A fall guy, but he made a lot of money, even if he does get fired, unfortunately. 5 years for $31 million is what he signed for last year. 31 guaranteed. Boom. That's pretty good. But if there is somebody, it's probably going to be him because they're just so limited by what they can do with their salary cap because they are in the second apron zone. They can't even aggregate guys to trade. They have to trade guys one by one by one. So that's a problem. They don't have the opportunity to sign anybody to a mid-level exception. They just can't because they are in that second apron. So they just got to sign minimum guys. And who are they going to trade? This is for like the next two seasons, too. The Beal thing, if you're going to trade anybody, because we did talk about the Phoenix Suns and who the heck they are. Their big three had to be bigger. They had to be really good because of who they are 4 through 12. They are not OKC. They are not Minnesota, obviously, that has Conley and Gobert and Jaden McDaniels and Nikhil Alexander-Walker. They just ain't that good. And they overpaid for everybody. And do you want to implode, I should say, that big three and try and trade Beal, who has a no trade exception and a 15% trade kicker. That's a lot of dough. I know Matt Ishbia's got a lot of dough making those mortgages happen throughout the United States of America, but what's the other option? I mean it might be trying to get somebody to take Beal, but then we watch them and I picked them in a seven game series, and you see those big three perform, and they do perform pretty well most of the season until things got real tough and this team just took it to them in the first couple games. So I don't know. It's probably going to be the same team but with a new coach, I guess.
I think good luck trading Bradley Beal. I mean, again, especially with the no trade clause, but it's either, yes, just bring in a new coach and a new idea, new vibes, whatever. I mean, maybe that changes it. Maybe it doesn't. Or it feels like you try and trade either one of your big stars, your Kevin Durant or your Devin Booker. I think I would lean towards a Durant over Booker. You're looking at age and all that. But that's a huge, obviously, decision. But you're going to at least get maybe some draft capital back and maybe some players that fit more with those other guys. Feels like those are the only two things. But we can talk about this later in the week as the series start to dry up. But brutal. brutal way to go out. The only thing that was good was like Devin Booker had a good game instead of like very having a stinker in an elimination game again.
49.
Yeah, yeah, I know. Nice.
Thanks for showing up finally.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. But and you did say it, Tass. For them, in order to be competitive in this series, to even win the series, yeah, okay, 49 was awesome in game four. A little too late, right?
Oh, yeah.
A lot of the series, Booker didn't look like a top 10 guy. Durant didn't look like a top 5 guy in the league. It was Ant looking like that. A lot of the series. I mean, I know Ant had one bad game, but the other three were lights out and takeover mode half the time. So, they, you know, the stars let them down. Obviously, the role players didn't do a lot. And that's why you got swept in the end.
Yeah.
Speaking of, sorry, I
blame Beal, but at the same time, Booker wasn't himself the entire series until now.
So let's talk about the other coach in this game. That was weird. Chris Finch had to leave in the fourth quarter after an inadvertent collision with his own guard, Mike Conley, sort of crashing into the side there. And the team said he has a ruptured patellar tendon in his right knee.
Jeez.
So this is Chris Finch, the Wolves coach. They just swept, but we'll see. Will he be on the side? I mean, it's a severe injury, obviously. Could be on the sidelines, sitting, I guess. I don't know what they'll do here.
He was able to leave the arena on crutches.
Okay.
So I imagine he'll
be there. Yes, yeah. I'm with you, but still, man, that sucks.
They play hard for that, dude.
Holy crap. Yeah, a little too hard, I guess.
He got pancaked, man. He got blasted by Conley.
You can see his face right away. Yeah. It's like, oh, man, that hurts.
But it was Booker's hip check that got Conley flying.
Yeah, exactly. I guess he'll probably be on a chair, right?
That's like, what I would
think. Give him a cool rolling chair or something. I feel like that Hunter guy in the NCAA tournament after he hurt his Achilles or whatever, he was coaching from a chair. I imagine that Minnesota is probably big LA Laker fans right now. Give their coach a little bit more time to rest.
Yeah.
Because if the Nuggets end it tonight, like the series will start pretty quickly.
That's a good point. Yeah. I don't know how fast they bump it up, but that's a great point.
You definitely don't factor in a coach returning from injury when you're prognosticating the second round of the playoffs.
No, you don't.
And he can't have that ankle aid. You roll around, like you put your knee on to have like an ankle, if you have an ankle problem, you know, that aid, because his knee is hurt.
Yeah, that little rolly trolley thing.
Yeah, I don't know what to call it.
Yeah, I don't know.
But when somebody hurts their ankle, they just roll around on that thingy. Yeah.
But there's no way he could be in, he couldn't be in a wheelchair on the sidelines, right? Like a coach moves back and forth. There's no way they'd allow that.
I meant more like a rolly chair like we have.
I see. That makes more sense.
I don't know if that's
even
that either.
Yeah,
that seems like a little bit dangerous.
That's what I'm thinking.
Having Mike and Nori push him back and forth on the sideline.
All right, move me down. All right, move me back. Move me down. Yeah, we'll see here. So obviously sending best wishes to Finchie there. Bloody good coach, but unfortunate injury there. Any other thoughts on the Wolves series here? And the Suns flaming out here in four.
I've definitely talked way too much about the Phoenix Suns, mainly because I did pick them in seven. I thought there was a frickin' chance. I guess we just didn't. We did talk enough about the Minnesota Timberwolves, but if there's anything left to say, it's these guys are obviously all fighting for each other, and that's the best part.
They had some incredible defensive possessions where the Suns were moving the ball. Like, that thing was fizzing around, to you Lee's term, but they were just scrambling everywhere and like cutting off everything. There was a couple, and there's clips going around on Twitter that I'm sure everybody has seen. It's just like, wow, they were fighting their ass off and locked in defensively. Every guy, it's McDaniels, Nikhil Alexander-Walker, obviously their stars are bought in as well. Even Conley getting up there in age fights hard on the defensive end. Yeah, great, great effort. And I love that they saw, like, let's just end this now. Like, let's not mess around with our food. We have them down. We got our foot on their throats, and let's just end them now. And obviously, Ant was a big reason why. And you brought it up. I mean, that dunk. Look, that looked like Michael Jordan.
It looked like
Michael Jordan. It does. How he dunks the ball looks like Jordan. And obviously, Ant has an incredible series. He has one bad game, but in the series, still averages 31 points per game on 51% shooting, 44 from deep, 8 boards, 6 assists, 2 steals, nearly a block. And this is his first playoff series win, you know, had lost 2 prior. So I looked it up. Jordan's first playoff series win. It took him a couple times as well, right?
You know,
88 was Jordan's first series win. He lost in 85. They lost to the Bucks. Remember, these were short series. They were best of 5.
Fibers.
Lost to the Bucks in 4. Then he ran into the juggernaut Celtics the next 2 seasons. So lost, got swept both times.
Celtics were good.
But in 88 against the Cavs, Jordan averaged 45 points per game, 5 boards, 5 assists, shot 56%, barely missed a free throw, and that was a 5-game series against the Cavaliers. So
the
beginning
of the Cavs' mastery.
That's right. But it's just like, it's funny that you see these stats we get now and we go nuts. We're like, whoa, look at these numbers. And then you're like, it's nice to always be reminded. It's like, holy crap.
Yes.
There's a reason he's the GOAT, man. The guy went for 45 in a series, in a 5-game series, needed all of it. He started those first 2 games of that series with like 55 and 50 in 2 wins there. And then the Cavs got back into it, and he said no. Got that first series win. But around, took him a couple times is my point, just like Ant. And yeah, it's just incredible to compare, like how close they are in appearance and how they play, and obviously just the FU attitude that they hold themselves with.
Yeah, and the way that they get everybody on board, like, we're following this guy wherever he's going to take us. I wouldn't have been surprised if Kevin Durant said that looked like God disguised as Anthony Edwards out there.
All right, so the Wolves move on. Let's keep going here. Again, we're sticking in the West. Another incredible game on Sunday, and this was James Harden and the Clippers holding off the Mavericks' crazy comeback attempt in Game 4. That series tied 2-2. Kyrie and the Mavs, Trey, fighting all the way back from down 31 points to then take the lead on a miraculous layup from Kyrie over 3 guys.
Looked like the Kobe Bryant shot against 4 Chicago Bulls.
Where everybody is up.
But Kyrie made his.
And he did. And it looked like, oh my God, they did this. Like, what? This is going to be a brutal Clippers loss. And no. James Harden had other ideas. It was just floater after floater after floater. Paul George hit a big 3, bunch of free throws. And the Clips, despite giving up a huge lead, pulled it out in the fourth quarter.
How can you not think of other classic playoff moments when you're watching the playoffs? Paul George from the corner looking like Sean Elliott.
Ooh!
From way deep, heels up. Great shot by Paul George. And man, James Harden has been the best, most reliable Clipper in this playoff series so far. What a weird game to watch. A 31-point lead for the Clippers, that Kyrie starts getting hot. They finally come back. But even in the first half, Dallas is playing incredible. They're making all these big plays. The fans are going insane. You look up, it's still a 20-point game.
Yeah, they couldn't stop them for
it
that stretch.
It seemed like the Mavs would hit like a humongous 3 in the second quarter. I'm like, all right, this has got to be like a 10-point game. Nope, 19. Didn't make any sense, but they finally got back. And then, yeah, James Harden went crazy. 5 for 6 in the fourth quarter. All of them were floaters. All of them came on Luka Doncic. I'm ashamed to admit it, but I spent several minutes looking for a screen cap of Austin Powers in Goldmember when he walks into the bathroom and he says, "Fat bastard left a floater!" That's all I could think of, because it was the same play over and over. Luka standing there, arms up, Maxi Kleba standing under the rim, and Harden just dumping in the floaters easily. 33 points on the night for Harden, 33 for Paul George, who was major in the first half. What a weird series this has been. The Mavs look so much better when Kawhi Leonard plays.
Yeah.
That's kind of been the key. When he's not out there, they obviously are thrown off a little bit, and the Clippers just seem to find their flow a little bit easier because they're not trying to figure out how to integrate Kawhi into their offense. So they knew what they had going into this one with Harden, with Paul George, and they just put the team on their back and carried them to a really, really nice victory. To be able to give up a 31-point lead, fully give it up, the Mavericks take the lead and come back and actually get the win, that's pretty impressive.
Yeah, Paul George did all the heavy lifting in the first half. Obviously hit that huge 3 that Trey said. I mean, that was a huge 3. But it was Harden taking over in the second half, mainly the fourth quarter. Yeah, either blowing by Luka. I think P.J. Washington may have got one of those floaters as well. He got his eyes on that floater in the bowl once or twice. But yeah, he just like every time. And I heard on the Hoop Collective that Harden hit 11 floaters this entire season.
Yeah, it looked different.
Come on.
Yeah, 11 the entire season.
Well, that floor.
Saving him.
That's
Save
right.
him.
And hit 5 there down the stretch.
Yeah, 6 overall, 6 in that fourth quarter. And you just don't see James Harden hit floaters like that.
Not anymore.
Yeah, he just doesn't. He pulls up. And if he gets by somebody like he was getting by Luka pretty easily on a couple of those possessions late in this game, he would pull up by the elbow, but instead he was just hitting a floater. So he hit one early in the fourth quarter, and then he had 3 consecutive possessions. First 2 were against Luka, and then Kleba got one. And then after that possession, Luka threw his arms up at Jason Kidd. Like, what are we doing? It seemed like. And they went to the timeout, and then he got 2 more in a row against P.J. Washington, back-to-back at a minute in the 40-second mark. So that's like 5 possessions in the last few minutes where he was hot. And so he just feels good. And they did throw different guys at him to try and figure it out, because they do have it sort of figured out with Kawhi out. They have won both games with Kawhi sitting, and they've lost both games with Kawhi playing. Yeah, it is very weird. But they know who their top two is, and Paul George is awesome. He was coming off a seven-point game and smoking hot. They're running plays for him. 16 points in the first quarter there, 26 in the first half. He did that thing that P.J. Washington did in game three where they got into that altercation. He just did the arms crossed looking at the bench. Paul George did that while running back. Yeah, it was pretty cool. That was pretty cool. And then that three, 2 minutes left, it was literally over the backboard, sort of, kind of. But like that's where his position was. Yeah. Like that was a tough position as he was like floating onto the baseline.
JJ was begging for a different camera angle. He's like, we can't see it. We can't see it right. We don't have the baseline cam set up. That was great.
He's producing the podcast.
Yeah, he's got all the angles down now. Yeah.
That was great. And the Luka thing is interesting because Harden was just going by him. And he was questionable coming into this game with a knee injury. And it did look like that. It was an issue. I mean, he is limpy. He was 1 of 9 from three. Terrence Mann was doing a good job getting all up into him. And he's slowing down. I don't want to point to the injuries, but he is slowing down. I mean, he's not shooting well.
No. He's letting Kyrie down after the game. Like, he's admitting to that. And this is why I picked Luka as the guy under the most pressure, I thought, going into the first round. Especially now with Kawhi not playing in some of these games. This would be a brutal, I think, first-round loss for the Mavericks if they do not pull this out. Still a three-game series. This has been a weird one. So maybe when you start to think you have this figured out, the opposite happens. Obviously, with Kawhi not being there in Game 4, there's a lot of people going, well, that's a wrap. Dallas is going to take this. And instead, they build a 31-point lead. And you're like, well, that's a wrap. And the team comes back and takes the lead. You're like, well, that's a wrap. Now it is back to 5. And then the Clippers tie it up. What a weird game. What a weird series. But yeah, maybe it's the knee. I mean, if you're out there, I'm sort of getting into the whole, like, little excuses. He's got to be better. I think he knows it. Because Kyrie did everything he could. You're right. When they were trying to come back there in the first half, he was hitting everything, but they couldn't get stops. And it was like, oh my God, they're wasting this. So they put together a few stops, they would be back in this game. It'd be a little more manageable. Maybe, you know, 12, 13 or whatever at the half. Still 17, I think, at the half. But still, he did it. He kept going in the second half. He was incredible. He's been incredible in this series. The shot-making from these guys, your Hardens and your Kyries and your Paul Georges in the first half, and Luka at times, it's like next level. Fun series. So we'll see what happens. Game 5 is not till Wednesday. And I will say Lawrence Frank, ahead of Game 4, said that Kawhi is indefinitely out due to the right knee inflammation. I think it feels like it's like, how does he feel come Wednesday? Is he ready to give it a go? He not. We saw him in Game 3. He didn't look good. I mean, it was probably a bad decision in the end for him to give it a go.
Yeah. When he threw down that alley-oop and he just hung on the rim, it looked like he didn't want to fall on his knee.
He didn't want to fall. Yeah.
That,
I agree.
That was straight. That was a great play to get him an alley-oop. But, yeah, he's not right. And then the Clippers just know who they are with the top two that we talked about. But everybody else was doing awesome. Terrence Mann, again, throwing himself at Luka. You just know where you're going to get beyond those guys. Powell was awesome off the bench. The center spot, Zubats plus Plumlee, was pretty damn good. Westbrook was throwing, being as freaking Westbrook-y as he could. So it was all right. It was all right without Kawhi, which is really damn strange.
Do you think Kidd botched it by not switching up the center position down the stretch when Harden started to feel in his groove there and maybe putting some more height there at the rim to maybe get in Harden's head and deter him? I don't know. He was cooking, so maybe it wouldn't have mattered, but going to a Gafford or a Lively? Or do you think it wouldn't have mattered?
Maxey wasn't helping.
No.
You know, I think it. I don't think that that's why you lost. I think they lost because they got down by 31 in the first half and had to give it their all to get back even into this game. But certainly you could have gone with a Gafford. I think there's somebody to challenge something at the rim.
Yeah, it was so weird for me with this game because I had to go pick up Nora from the airport like midway through the fourth quarter. It was gridlock in Atlanta, surprise, surprise. So I fired it up on the audio. The app there, and I thought it was glitching because it just kept saying Harden floater, Harden floater, and no. But then the score kept changing. I'm like, hold on, very weird listening to a game on the radio. Fun, but very strange.
Yeah, I don't like it.
No, it's a lot.
I
for
just
them
want
to
see the picture.
Yeah,
I'd rather.
I came
picture.
Back and watched it to make sure he did hit all these different floaters than they were. But
6 floaters. Pinching 6 floaters. That is a lot in a fourth quarter. 6 That's all. Yeah. And he didn't play every single minute. I mean, that's like every freaking minute he played, he hit one.
Yeah.
But yeah, he hit him in a row over and over and over again. And they're pretty open.
He's more aggressive when Kawhi's not there.
Yep.
I mean, he just like, he's sort of like, okay, well, I guess I gotta like really attack and look to score here.
See if he's good next game.
Yeah, we'll see. Pivotal game 5 Wednesday. In NBA history, teams breaking the 2-2 tie in game 5 of a best of 7 series have gone on to take the whole thing more than 80% of the time. That's why it's pivotal.
This one is pivotal.
It's a pivotal game 5 come Wednesday.
This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. Head over to MichelobUltra.com/courtside to learn more.
Discover the latest collections from David Yurman, as seen recently, styled on basketball stars like Jaime Jaquez, Jalen Green, D'Angelo Russell, and others. David Yurman is a celebrated American jewelry company inspired by the beauty of art, architecture, and the natural world. The story of David Yurman begins in New York City with David, a sculptor, and his wife Sybil, a painter and ceramicist. When the artists began collaborating, their goal was to simply make beautiful designed objects to wear. Over 40 years later, the Yurmans and their son Evan continue to redefine American luxury jewelry with timeless, modern collections for women and men defined by inspiration, innovation, consummate craftsmanship, and Cable, the brand's artistic signature. David Yurman's collections are available on davidyurman.com.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
Moving on, back to Saturday, the Lakers finally beat the Nuggets. They said enough is enough. You're not beating us 12 times in a row, as everyone said. They broke an 11-game losing streak to Denver. And, you know, they gained a little lifeline here. They'll play tonight in Game 5 and try and keep their season alive. LeBron great, AD a monster, D'Angelo Russell hitting shots, Reeves. I mean, they all four played really well in this one.
Yeah.
As they held on there at the end and sort of like stiff-armed the Nuggets. Your thoughts?
Well, they do need all four of those guys playing well. And that's why they won this game, because it was the first time that it's happened this series. Whatever happens here, if it's done in 5, I think people will just skip over Anthony Davis and him having a freaking great series. 30 points, 14 boards, 4 assists on 62% from the floor for this series, playing 42 minutes a game. He's 31. It looks like he's just gotten better at playing in the playoffs and preserving his body. So that's very good.
But has had some stinker fourth quarters.
In the game 3, he hasn't had
2.
Yeah.
Well, where he's done nothing.
Yeah. He hasn't been a scorer. But he needs some help. I mean, to be a 30-point average guy, want Michael Jordan numbers? I mean, those are basically Michael Jordan numbers, 30 points on 62%. But he has been good against Jokic. Forget the itches. They were getting into the paint in this one. 72 points in the paint. They were just getting into it. And 42 points by halftime. So that's 21 buckets in the first half in the paint. That's like almost once a minute. That's like basically every possession. They were just doing whatever they wanted. Mm-hmm. And Mike Malone was really pissed at that. and they were just not getting back. So it is strange that the Nuggets can just turn it on when they want. And that's how they are here at 3-1. They've just led for 41 minutes in this series. So like 10 minutes per game. Really, it seems like they're in control at 3-1, but the Lakers have been pretty damn good. It's been pretty close until the second half in most of these games. But yeah, they got good games from Russell and Reese. Finally, we're able to have a good game at the same time because LeBron's been great. Anthony Davis has been great. They just kind of need all four of them. And they scrapped. They won the rebound battle for the first time. They were scrappy.
Yeah, the question is, have the Lakers actually been the better team for most of the series, or has Denver just been playing with their food there through two quarters, sometimes three quarters before they win some of these games. Didn't happen in game four, though. I don't know if you have an answer to that. Maybe it's a little bit of both. What are your thoughts?
Poor shooting by the Nuggets. 9 for 30 from three. The Lakers only made 8 threes, so it wasn't that big of a deal overall, but we expect the Nuggets to play a little bit better. You got to tip your cap to AD. That was an incredible performance. 25 and 23. That's a lot of roast beef, of course, but also 6 assists and only 1 turnover. He scored 2 points in the fourth quarter, of course, but guess what? The Lakers didn't blow the lead. That was the huge thing here because Jamal Murray was kind of nursing a little bit of a calf strain. That could be a problem for Denver going forward. But when I look at game five, I think that it's probably going to be a Nuggets blowout, assuming that Murray can play, because this is the first time they didn't come back. We've talked about the script has been the exact same for all of these 12 games that they've played against each other the past couple of seasons. Lakers get out to a 12-point lead, Nuggets come back and win it. They just weren't able to do it in the second half. Part of that, I thought, was taking away Aaron Gordon. He wasn't necessarily as locked in as he has been throughout this series. If I'm not mistaken, Denver lost game four against Minnesota in the first round last year after they had a 3-0 lead. So
they did,
understandably, they're taking their foot off the gas a little bit here. You have to think they come back and smack it down in game five. But a lot of that comes down to, I think, Jamal Murray being able to play the way Jamal Murray has, because he wasn't nearly as aggressive in this game. And with his injury, with Reggie Jackson coming off a sprained ankle that he had in, I guess that was game three, he did play in this one, but wasn't very effective. Didn't score in 9 minutes. I feel like Tass Minutes Mellis over here, breaking down the 60-second splits. But as long as Murray is able to go, I think the Nuggets should still be pretty confident heading back to Denver.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, he's questionable heading into Game 5 tonight, Murray, whether or not he plays. When he has played, if I'm being honest, he hasn't had an amazing series.
No.
Outside of that, what, 5 to 6 minute stretch there at the end of Game 1 when he hits the game winner over AD, he's been really off. The numbers are bad. 38% shooting from Jamal Murray in the series, 20% from deep. Jamal Murray, of years prior against the Lakers, has cooked them, zoned them. So that's huge. I'm with you. I think I'm taking Denver tonight. It just feels like they're the type of team, like, okay, yeah, like we got to, like, from the jump, try and put this team away, whether or not Jamal Murray plays. What do you think of LeBron getting heated at Darvin Ham there when he would not challenge the play? KCP, I guess it was, knocking it out. They said it was out on LeBron, and LeBron, very demonstrative.
Stompy.
In front of Ham. So much so that then the Nuggets just scored on a layup. Jamal Murray got his two easiest points of the series there because he was going crazy. Imagine that. It ended up being a 2-point Nuggets win. Oh, my God. But, yeah, any thoughts on LeBron stewing there over Darvin Ham not listening to him?
I like mad LeBron. It's fun for us. I will say, though, yeah, just despite the game two game winner for Jamal
Murray.
Game
two, excuse me, yeah.
Yeah, that was great. I had to look back.
Game one, Jesus.
Yeah, they blur together, for sure. But besides that, Jamal hasn't been great shooting the ball. This Nuggets team hasn't been great shooting the ball. Trey brought it up. They really have struggled. They've shot 28% from three. That's not good. But if you take away Jokic and Michael Porter Jr., they're 19%. Like the rest of them, 17 of 87. The rest of them.
Yeah.
Shout out to Tony Jones of The Athletic for providing that. But they really haven't been. But they can just turn it on, and that's what championship teams do. To repeat is tough because the other team's just scrappy for four quarters. The Nuggets just know, all right, we can turn it on. So they have been able to. God, they're going to play the Minnesota Timberwolves. This is going to be a freaking fun series. Round two in the West is going to be freaking fun. Yeah, it is going to be interesting to see how they bounce back in Game 5 if they just demolish it, right?
Jokic, 33 points, 14 boards, and 14 assists, and one of those assists was one of the highlights of the postseason so far, where it gets thrown over his head while he's running. He almost shrugs mid-run. The ball bounces in front of him, and he taps it in one motion to Michael Porter Jr. for the dunk. And that looks so sick. Like, only this guy can pull off a play like that. It was an incredible pass. But we'll see how he does tonight and the rest of these Nuggets, and if the Lakers got a little bit left in them.
Yeah, he's got to just, like, cover his eyes. Everybody, no look is cool. Okay, taking another level. He could do a no look and just tap it, but he could also just, like, cover his eyes.
It's like I'm shrugging because he was awesome. Like, I think it's coming over here. It was just chucked over his head.
That was cool.
What a play. We'll see if the Lakers can get this 2-6. Let's hear from you and the stream team. Do you think the Nuggets take care of business at home after bouncing back from the loss? The final series in the West. We'll move quickly on this one because we got a lot to talk about still. But the Thunder roll to the 3-0 series lead. 106-85 win over the Pelicans on Saturday. Competitive, I guess, until the Thunder went on that big run in the second quarter. They pushed the lead to 54-39. SGA started it off with a three, and then Lou Dort caught fire and hit three consecutive threes. And then the Pelicans, they just don't have the offense to sort of catch up. And obviously OKC's defense is next level as well. But yeah, OKC looking to sweep this tonight. You think that'll be the case, TK?
The only way that the Thunder don't sweep tonight is if the Pelicans come out and just shoot a three-pointer every single time down the court. They're shooting 28% on the series from three, so I don't know. I don't know if that's the greatest move, but they're making nine threes a game, and they made how many yesterday? Exactly nine, 17 for the Thunder. They just can't keep up, nor can they get stops. But other than that, things are looking good for New Orleans. I wonder what percentage of headlines for the Thunder when they win by 10 or more points say the Thunder roll. I bet it's at least 80%.
Yeah,
it's you see just, it every single time.
Yeah, especially,
we're all big Garth Brooks fans out here.
Yeah, especially in a dominant win.
Exactly.
You're right. If it's 15 or 20, they rolled. And now they're rolling in the series too. Yeah, it's almost
Brooks. New Orleans is outclassed right now.
Yeah, exactly. No Zion.
Yep.
I mean, you've got a less than 100% Brandon Ingram. You needed a look with no Zion. They needed a big series from either CJ McCollum and or Brandon Ingram, probably both of them. And McCollum's averaging 17 points on 38% shooting. He can't really hit threes. Ingram is in the Dortcher chamber. He's averaging 16 points per game on 41% shooting. And Lou Dort is not only bottling up Brandon Ingram and making his life a living hell. Lou Dort can't miss from three. He's 10 of 18 from deep. And he's been good all season long. This guy is really a solid 3-and-D guy. So, yeah, I think it's over tonight. I sort of thought that after that game one, somehow the Pelicans, didn't win. And OKC pulled it out despite not playing great and having a lot of playoff jitters. It'll probably be over tonight unless, maybe Trey Murphy hits 11 three-pointers or something.
Yeah.
Thunder roll? Yeah, because if it's a sweep, Thunder roll fits really well.
Oh, jeez. Thunder roll in the second round. Jeez.
Yeah,
you're good.
You're right by Texas. Garth Brooks. I mean, they like their country.
I think Garth's from Oklahoma.
Is he?
Pretty sure.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, they're perfect. I mean, that's fine. I think that's fitting.
They should have him sing an anthem or something. Oh. Lead the prayer.
They would love it.
I haven't seen a lot of anthems being sung.
It's a fair point.
Like, talked
what
about.
What do you mean?
Like, I don't know.
Talked about. They're singing them. They sing them
I know they're
game.
Singing them, but... could you tell me one single person that's done an anthem so far in the playoffs? It's usually like a weird, like, oh my God, they got so-and-so?
I do know Dawn Staley rang the bell for the 76ers.
Holy, Dawn Staley.
Dawn Staley, Dr. J, and Iverson sitting courtside. That looked cool, man.
Slapped Jalen Brunson's hand, gave him a little high five before the game
in the
hallway.
Oh, I saw that, yeah.
Anyway, Lou Dort, I didn't think he was going to be this great a three-point shooter before this season, but having his career three-point season, then being able to do it and just doing that, shooting from there is all he really has to do. But he's been scrapping through, fighting through every screen and all that. So that's been cool for – he's gotten under Brandon Ingram's skin, that's for sure. So Ingram was quiet, only five first-half points. The other guy who was supposed to take over was CJ McCollum, who was cold in the first half. He was 3 of 12. And that didn't happen, so they just don't have the depth that OKC does. Mm-hmm. They do not. And it was awesome. Actually, Jalen Williams got hit in the first minute, and he had to leave this game, and Kayson Wallace came in and was awesome. Just a guy you just need to come through. Like his first possession, actually the first minute he was in, he did a 50-foot sprint. He was trailing Herbert Jones, and he poked it through. He had a nice assist. He was another steal, floaters. The guy was doing everything. So that was great. And Chet's block shots as the Pelicans were trying to give it to him was pretty cool.
Oh,
they were trying to give it to him hard.
Maybe stop trying to do that.
Yeah.
I mean, respect. I mean, go for the poster. Yeah. We all love that. But Chet was literally no dunks.
No dunks.
It was like, we're not having it. That was incredible. And you're right. And then J-Dub returns, and like then he had a stretch in the game.
He was hot.
Where he just like took over and basically put it to bed. Like that was it, because the lead just ballooned. Related OKC news, Mark Daigneault named NBA's Coach of the Year there on Sunday, finishing ahead of Magic coach Jamal Mosley and Wolves coach Chris Finch. Daigneault finished as the runaway winner. 89 of the 100 first-place votes, maybe 99 first-place votes, 473 total points. Not a surprise here, TK, that Mark Daigneault is Coach of the Year. He got the coach's Coach of the Year, and he got the real Coach of the Year.
One seed in the West with one of the youngest teams in the entire NBA, that's a pretty easy choice.
Any notes?
My note is that he's 39 years old. I didn't think he was that young. I should know how old Mark Dagnalt is, but and he looks young.
Yeah, he's always squinting. Aaron, what's that?
Yeah, he is a squinter.
He's a big squinter. Yeah. He's squinting like this.
I think he was. I think he was asked about it. Yeah, he was asked about why he squinted.
I think so. Did you guys watch the second season of Traitors? JD, you can chime into it as well. Parvati from Survivor, who you obviously know, she's a massive squinter.
Oh, big time.
She's always squinting. So Mark Dagnall reminds me of Parvati from Traitors.
needs glasses or is just sizing people up?
It's more like sizing people up.
Yeah, yeah.
Don't let them see your eyes. Don't let them see your pupils. Can't get a read on you.
That's so true.
Wow. So true. That guy can see without pupils? That's pretty good.
It's pretty impressive.
You like Jalen Williams' post-game look?
Oh, yes. Right.
Bejeweled ski mask?
Yes. Yeah. It looked, like Kenny from South Park. And
like a submarine diver from like the 1960s. Steve Zissou. What a crazy look.
It was an insane look. It looked funny.
Yeah.
But it's like, I was like,
you're feeling good when you show up to post game wearing that.
Yeah.
And like, springtime.
Could you hear well in that?
My guess is, yeah. I mean, a little muffled, but you can still hear fine.
We had some incredible looks this weekend. Yeah. So, over the next couple of weeks here, we're going to find out MVP, Defensive Player of the Year, Rookie of the Year, along with all NBA, all defensive, and all rookie teams. Got a few of the awards handed out there last week, though. All right, let's move to the Eastern Conference. We'll start with one of the games of the weekend. Jalen Brunson dropping a Knicks playoff record 47 points in game four to give the Knicks the 3-1 lead. They'll head back to Madison Square Garden for game five, but 18-34 shooting for Jalen Brunson, topping Bernard King's previous franchise playoff high of 46 set back in 84. He did that twice. What a game from this guy, and there's a lot to unpack from this one. I don't know if you want to start with Brunson or you got something else.
Well, I was just surprised at the Knicks winning this game because, yes, Brunson was friggin' awesome, but the rest of the guys just weren't having a hot shooting night by any means, but they were doing enough.
Yeah, doing everything else.
They were doing so much. I mean, Josh Hart didn't hit a shot.
And he was amazing.
Oh my goodness.
Yes.
Rodman mode.
Yeah.
That's a Rodman line. 4 points. 5 assists, 5 turnovers, 0-for-7 from the field, 17 rebounds.
Oh, my God.
17 rebounds!
Yeah, apparently he became just the 6th player in NBA history to have 0 made field goals and at least 15 rebounds in a playoff game.
Wow. Is he the shortest to ever do that?
I assume.
Maybe.
15 rebounds in a game? Yeah, I didn't go and see the other 5 who did it, but there was one player who did it twice, I saw.
Wow.
You guys know who he is. But he didn't know. No, not Dennis.
Oh, wow.
Is the first
Draymond?
No. The first 3 letters of his name are close to Den.
Wait.
Close to Den?
It sounds like Den, but with another letter to start the name.
Ben.
Ben
Simmons?
No.
Oh.
Ben.
Wallace.
Yeah.
Oh,
that makes sense.
Yeah, anyway. But he didn't.
Sounds like Den.
That's a great fascinating hint. Yeah.
What a series. What a series. Because that was by far his worst scoring game of the series. He's been hot.
Yeah,
and
right.
Then Dante DiVincenzo not hitting shots. He missed every single one of his first half shots. You saw Tibbs yelling at him, like, go up top, you know, do the wheel thing where you just grab a dribble handoff. And DiVincenzo went to the bench, and he was just daydreaming at some point. It was a little daydream. Dante Daydream. The DD stands for Daydream now. Anyways, Hartenstein, he didn't have a great game shooting. Mitchell Robinson was out. Precious Achiuwa came in, didn't hit a basket, but did so many other things. He missed a dunk. Bradley Beal-like, he missed a dunk. Boyan left the game, but I don't know.
How did they win this game?
Yeah, exactly. They missed.
Jalen Brunson was a big reason why.
Yeah, but they missed 10 free throws. They lost the turnover battle. They lost the 3-point battle, but they had so much fight. OG scoring, helping out on boards, the block shots. That one on Nick Batum, wow. 16-14, 3 blocks. DiVincenzo came alive in the second half. McBride was awesome. And when it comes down to it, they just had more fight. They had 15 offensive rebounds, 7 offensive rebounds in the fourth quarter. 11-2 second chance points in the fourth quarter. That's what it was. They wanted rebounds. This is what they did all season long. It's the same freaking team as the regular season. Tibbs got them going hard.
What do you think?
I thought this was kind of flipping the script from the Knicks' couple of wins in Madison Square Garden, where Brunson couldn't really get untracked, but everybody else was hitting threes, so everything evened out. This time, it was Brunson who has apparently just figured out the way the Sixers are going to guard him. It was working for a while, putting some length on him, having those guys trail, but now he just waits for that guy to fly past.
Yeah, yeah.
That's an easy shot. That was super impressive. And then the defense from OG Anunoby and Precious Achiuwa when Isaiah Hartenstein checked out in the third quarter completely flipped the game. OG made it almost impossible for Joel Embiid to catch the ball. Just fronting him on a lot, denying him the catch, and then they would send another guy. Oftentimes, Achiuwa being the double, doing some roaming stuff. That was just so impressive to limit Embiid to no field goals in the fourth quarter, which has happened in about a quarter of his playoff games. Joel Embiid has gone without a made shot in the fourth quarter. It's so weird because it feels like every year, and this year included, Embiid is not quite healthy enough to be able to carry this team to victories. And then when he sits, the team isn't good enough to overcome him sitting.
Right.
So he's got to play 48 minutes, it feels like. But also, we all know there's no way Joel Embiid can play 48 minutes. He needs to basically take the second quarter off if he's going to be effective in the second half. Only one rebound in the fourth quarter as well. He had that open jumper that he could have knocked down with about 26 seconds. Maybe it was 16 seconds. There was a six on the clock. I guarantee it. Instead, tried to get fouled at the rim. Yeah. Went for the layup. Should have just took the jumper. We've seen you make a jumper how many times this season?
Yeah.
That's how he was scoring more than a point a minute during the regular season. I'll also say Tyrese Maxey, not the greatest fourth quarter. He's been pretty solid, I think, in this playoff series, but they were daring him to beat the Knicks. He was just a little hesitant and a little out of it. It came down to that free throw that Kyle Lowry missed, and Maxey didn't know the play was on. Yeah. I thought that was
so
a big time woof.
Strange.
So yeah, the Knicks scrapped this one out, got the win there in Madison Square Garden.
Yeah.
That's what Chuck was calling it all night last night.
Yeah.
Calling it Madison Square Garden.
Oh, because of the crowd.
Knicks fans.
Holy crap.
Embiid was mad. He was mad that all those Knicks fans got there.
I mean, well, what are you going to do?
Yeah.
Like, as many people have pointed out, it's cheaper to take the train, go watch a game in Philadelphia than it is
to get
a ticket in Madison Square Garden.
He's mad at his fans for not being packed into that house to hear whoever sing the national anthem. I'm not sure who it was, but go there and sing and cheer for your guys. But you're right in the assessment of Joel Embiid. He just there's going to be playoff games where he's just not healthy. That's
well, you're
just
damned
the way
if you do, damned if you don't, because you just said it. You can't rest him because your team always gets beat when he rests. Okay, so you got to play him, but you can't because he's also a giant man who had a knee injury. And before that, even, we've seen the conditioning goes as you get into the fourth quarter when he has a lot of minutes on him. I think the game actually turned in New York's favor at the end of the third quarter. Sixers had a lead. They were up seven. They gave up back-to-back threes to Dante DiVincenzo, another three to Brunson on the wing. That was a big shot. They completely fell asleep on a baseline out-of-bounds play where I think it was Dante sort of snuck inside there. Brunson kicked it into him, just got a layup. And then they got outworked for two offensive rebounds because of Josh Hart being everywhere, and that gave up the and one to Brunson. And I think that was huge in, imagine that doesn't happen. Imagine they're up five, up seven. Maybe then Nurse goes, all right, Joel, we're going to get you 2 minutes here, 3 minutes here at the start of the fourth quarter. We got a little lead to play with. Instead, he couldn't because it was gone and they were trailing after the and one Brunson play. And it's like, okay, well, we got to play. Embiid, you got to go all 12 minutes here in the fourth.
Yeah.
And yeah, OG was a monster. But you're right, Maxey had two really good looks at three because the double was coming. It was a nice tweak, I thought, from Tibbs. Because earlier in the season, they sent a double at a series. They'd sent a double at Embiid, but they just sent it early, and he's a good passer. So he would just find an open guy, like, easily. They waited until Embiid, like, finally put the ball on the ground, and then they would send it, and sometimes off of Maxey, and it worked. It just worked better. It got them out of their flow a little bit, but Maxey had looks, and I mean, he had a great game. He's had an incredible series, but he wishes he had those ones back because they were wide open looks.
Yeah, that's a good call on the Tibbs changeup because that has messed things up for the 76ers that shouldn't have got rid of Jimmy Butler. I guess that's what it comes down to. They just need somebody else to help him out. But this team on the other side is just out scrapping. They've out rebounded the 76ers in three of the four games. They have won three out of the four games. They fight a lot more. The missed Kyle Lowry free throw on purpose to try and retain the ball that Tyrese Maxey wasn't aware of. That was weird. Would he have gotten it? I don't know, because Brunson was there to fight.
Yeah.
But it was weird
that
he...
It was a solid miss, though.
Yeah.
It went
far, and then the tap happened, and it basically got tapped to around the three-point line.
Yeah, Lowry put his arms
up. Fighting.
Where are you, man? He's literally puzzled by him not knowing that. Just a random note. Jalen Brunson did get injured and left the game and went to the locker room and came back and was still able to be awesome in the fourth quarter. And when he came back, he had his hands down his pants. He kind of had to get, it was weird to see a man having both hands down his pants, look like Al Bundy, look like Ed O'Neill, who is now the star of Clipped.
That's right. Coming on FX.
Who is Donald Sterling.
That's right.
Will he have his hands down his pants? Will he be a Donald Sterling? It sure seems like. I'm guessing. I don't know.
Stay tuned to FX's Clipped.
That's not out yet.
No.
Oh, can't wait.
Soon come.
Yeah, I'm sure this summer. I'm sure we'll be talking about it. It looks crazy. We got Lawrence Fishburne as Doc Rivers.
Looks crazy.
We got people playing like NBA guys, like the funny Chris Paul guy and JJ Redick, and it's going to be amazing. It's FX. If it's anything like the OJ one.
A juice. David Schwimmer saying juice every 13 seconds, man.
A juice.
Kyle Lowry was hilarious in this game. Had the grift you had on Twitter, Skeets, where like, what happened?
So Embiid sets a pick. Now he maybe has his leg out a little bit. Yeah. Brunson appears to trip on it. Maybe he's embellishing because he's trying to one out Lowry with in terms of looking for fouls and stuff. But anyway, Brunson falls to the ground as they're coming around this pick, and Lowry, you can see him look at Brunson, who's lying on his back, like, the opposite of a plank, because I guess you laid on your stomach when it was a plank, but laying on his back, looks down, decides, well, we're at the three-point line, I'm just going to basically trip myself over him as I attempt a three-pointer.
Yeah, that was amazing.
It was crazy.
And it worked.
And he got the call.
And he shot three free throws.
Yeah.
The movie pulled on the, to get those free throws at the end, OG runs into him, and you can see Lowry grab OG and pull guard. Both fall to him, and then he goes to the free throw line to shoot it, man. He should be a ref when he retires.
He can see
everything. I'm on to you. That ain't a foul. He's the only one who could do it.
Well, the funny part is, looking at Brunson playing him. Like, Brunson picking up a lot of Lowry moves, these Philadelphia Bulldog point guard types. He's smart as hell. He's cerebral, looking for every advantage. He's not as bad, but, give him 10 more years than he might be, because this is what Lowry's going to do. But that one was insane. That one, Lowry's got two of the crazier ones we saw. Remember earlier in the regular season, somebody fell over the basket, and he just purposely threw himself backwards over the guy on the ground when he could have just laid it in to get the foul.
Oh, yeah.
And then this one's next level, in my opinion. And I love Lowry, but that was I couldn't believe it. Oh, my God. So good.
And
it's funny for some reason.
It is good. And Brunson getting into it with Joel Embiid a little bit, where Embiid stuck his elbow out a little bit as Brunson was going through the lane, and then Brunson went up to him after. And it looked like he just said, what was that for? What'd you give me that for?
Yeah, it's exactly what he said.
And
Embiid seemed to play dumb. He's sort of like, what are you talking about?
Yeah, come on.
I hit people all the time. That's the big deal.
I had flashbacks to game three where there was testicles kicked, and Joel Embiid was doing a lot of that type of stuff that he sold and did well and got a lot of people angry, watching our show. You got to get mad at Embiid tugging on Mitchell Robinson's ankle and all that. Yes, I get all that whole package of that Embiid game will be cut together. I'm sure it already is. I haven't seen it, but that was a lot of testicle kicking and all that. It really was.
What do you think happens in game five here? You think the Knicks put it away?
Yes, I do. I think they will shoot better playing in real Madison Square Garden. And I don't know, they just seem to have more players that they can rely on. Tobias Harris has made 15 shots in this series.
Right.
That's the guy they chose over Jimmy Butler.
That's the guy they chose.
I remember that. He's ready to leave Philadelphia, I do believe.
I think they're ready for him to leave as well.
Yeah, it is a mutual. We'll drive you to the airport.
So we'll see. What a series, though, man. That was a really fun game. Those two games on Sunday, after a really, quite frankly, boring Saturday where we had a lot of blowouts, to start Sunday's slate with those two games, Brunson 47 in this back and forth affair there in Philly, and then the crazy comeback from the Mavericks, but Harden taking over. Those were awesome two games to get us going.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service anytime. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service that you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
You know, if I would have applied myself, I could have gone to the NBA.
You think so?
Yeah, I think so. But it's just like, it's been done. You know, I didn't want to, I was like, I don't want to be a follower. Hi, I'm Jason Concepcion.
And I'm Shea Serrano. And we are back. We have a new podcast from Wondery. It's called Six Trophies.
Woo!
And it's the f***ing best.
Each week, Shea Serrano and I are combing through all the NBA storylines, finding the best, most interesting, most compelling stories, and then handing out six pop culture themed trophies for six basketball related activities.
Trophies like the Dominic Toretto, I Live My Life a Quarter Mile at a Time trophy, which is given to someone who made a short-term decision with no regard for future consequence.
Or the Christopher Nolan Tenet trophy, which is given to someone who did something that we didn't understand.
Catalina Wine Mixer trophy.
Ooh, the Lauryn Hill You Might Win Some, But You Just Lost One trophy. And what's more, the NBA playoffs are here, so you want to make Six Trophies your go-to companion podcast through all the craziness. Follow Six Trophies on the Wondery app or wherever you get your podcasts. Listen ad-free right now by joining Wondery Plus. You know, if I would have applied myself, I could have gone to the NBA.
You think so?
Yeah, I think so. But it's just like, it's been done. You know, I didn't want to, I was like, I don't want to be a follower. Hi, I'm Jason Concepcion.
And I'm Shea Serrano. And we are back. We have a new podcast from Wondery. It's called Six Trophies.
Woo!
And it's the f***ing best.
Each week, Shea Serrano and I are combing through all the NBA storylines, finding the best, most interesting, most compelling stories, and then handing out six pop culture themed trophies for six basketball related activities.
Trophies like the Dominic Toretto, I Live My Life a Quarter Mile at a Time trophy, which is given to someone who made a short-term decision with no regard for future consequence.
Or the Christopher Nolan Tenet trophy, which is given to someone who did something that we didn't understand.
Catalina Wine Mixer trophy.
Ooh, the Lauryn Hill You Might Win Some, But You Just Lost One trophy. And what's more, the NBA playoffs are here, so you want to make Six Trophies your go-to companion podcast through all the craziness. Follow Six Trophies on the Wondery app or wherever you get your podcasts. Listen ad-free right now by joining Wondery Plus.
But we'll go to the third game from Sunday, and that was the Pacers hitting a franchise playoff best. 22 three-pointers to beat the Bucks, 126-113. Milwaukee comes into this game, obviously with no Giannis still, then no Damian Lillard. He's out. Chris Middleton, he's hobbled in this game after, I mean, we're not even probably going to talk about Friday night's incredible game between these two teams, uh-huh, with Middleton hitting huge shots, but then Halliburton with the game winner. And then Bobby Portis Jr., though, gets ejected 7 minutes into this game for getting into a little dust up there with Andrew Nembhard. They sort of exchanged shoves, and then Portis, I don't know, one-upped him with a little slap to the head. Got two techs.
Hot Bobby.
To Nembhard's one, and that's automatic ejection, but that did them in, man. That wasn't good for the Bucks.
Exactly,
chances.
And he was, I mean, they were going to him a lot right at the start of the first quarter, so you could tell that was going to be a part of their game plan, missing Giannis and missing Dame. They need to get offense somewhere else. Furthermore, like, the way Portis plays, he slows the ball down quite a bit, so you're able to take the air out of the ball a little bit, which keeps the Pacers from their running game, but instead, he got ejected.
Do you think it was deserved?
It looked bad.
Yeah.
I mean, the push and the slap, like, both looked pretty vicious, and I guess they were calling techs pretty early in this game, right? Like,
right.
Beverly got one for too small on a guy as well, but the Bucks, they fought. I thought they played pretty hard, and it was impressive that Middleton came in on a sprained ankle, sprained his other ankle, and then came back and still played hard, but, like, Pat Connaughton was initiating the offense. I saw John Hollinger saying, is this the most he's dribbled since he got to college? Like, he probably wasn't handling the ball all that often. You hear the horn go off, you're like, all right, the Bucks are bringing in a sub here, and it's Danilo Gallinari with the mohawk. You're like, this guy's going to be carrying the offense for us now. They couldn't do it. I do love seeing a Brook Lopez throwback game, but this one was kind of like a hybrid. Like, when he torched the Hawks way back when, game 5, 2021, I suppose, it was all post moves. Had a lot of post moves in this one, but then he also hit three threes. He was playing really well. Middleton was okay. They just did not have enough to keep up with the Pacers. And Miles Turner has had an awesome series. Was great in this one. 29 points, 9 boards, 4 assists, 3 blocks for this guy, hit 7 threes, had the massive thrunk. I guess that was on Lopez later in the game as well. He had a pretty poor game 1, just looked a little bit out of sorts, and ever since then, he's looked really comfortable in this series.
Yeah, over his last 3 playoff games, Miles Turner averaging 27 points per game, 8 boards, 4 assists, 2 blocks, and hit 56% of his threes. He's been incredible if you threw out the game 1. That they lost. So in all the wins, he's been really dominant. But yeah, Bucks obviously super shorthanded here, Tass, once Lillard was not going to be in there, and then once Bobby got tossed. They did put up a fight, but you know, Pacers got into their type of game they wanted to play with 126 points.
That's unfortunate for Bobby. I had expectations coming into this series because he has looked good when Giannis has been out this season because he's just the guy they give the ball to, especially during the regular season. It wasn't Dame time. And to do that in the first quarter, where you basically punched a guy, it was a punch attempt. He thought Nikola Mirotic was playing on the other team. I guess he just threw one at Nembhard. That sucks. I mean, he's had a decent series before that, so it really does. That could have been his game. I mean, it had to be his game.
Yeah.
His numbers were awesome with Giannis out this season. Then you take Lillard out. You needed one of those games, so that's not Nembhard, who took that shot fine. He was cool. He also had a great freaking game. He's had a great freaking series. And I know he's kind of a guy that we'll not talk about all that much, but he had 15 in this one and 9 assists, 0 turnovers. He's been good offensively in fourth quarter situations. He's felt good. He's been great defensively. Before that, he had 16, 20 in the last 2 games. He shot 67% the last 3 games. He's been really good to help out. And so they're deeper, as we know, as we saw Pat Connaughton have to dribble the ball. It's true. It's true. I've never seen Pat Connaughton dribble that much.
And Doc says that this team will not risk running out Giannis or Lillard if they're not healthy. So who knows if we'll even see them in the rest of the series. Maybe Indy puts us away. How about that game 3 on Friday night, though? Holy crap. I mean, that probably was the game of the entire weekend, if you want to include Friday night. The shot making from both these teams, Middleton doing his best to try and obviously take the lead at that point, but Halliburton's and one where he cooked Pat Bev and he got hit and still hit it in a game where he struggled from 3 but took over down the stretch. It was an awesome game.
I thought that was such a smart thing from Rick Carlisle to do on that play for Halliburton, because like you're saying, he was really struggling in that game, and he's better in a full court setting than he is in a half court setting. So they just inbounded the ball to him on the other side of the court and said, run as fast as you can. Yeah. Pat Bev couldn't keep up. He got crossed over twice on the same play.
Yeah. Huge shot. And then Halliburton did find his 3-pointer there in game 4. I think he ended with 5 from deep. But Pacers, man. Pacers are one game away from going to the second round. It's been a while since they've been in the second round. And liking their chances.
Could be a douchey as well, right? Lost game 1.
This could be a douchebag sweep. Interesting. Yeah. A bit of a weird douchebag sweep always when injuries come into play, but it would be. It absolutely would be. Or could be. Yeah, could be.
As for the Instigator Invitational, we have some updates here. I mentioned earlier Luka Doncic got a technical for complaining. Could have got a second one if you're asking me. That got me a point. I'm up to 2.
Okay.
Pat Bev got a technical in this one for taunting. You're up to 2 points.
Yeah.
And then a huge weekend for Tass. Had Bobby Portis on his team. So he gets 2 T's. So that's 2 points. We just need to make a decision here.
Yeah.
We need to make a decision here. Because it's 3 points for an ejection. So do you get 5 points right now, as in 2 points plus ejection equals 5?
I don't think
so. Or do you get 2 points total?
Yeah.
An ejection just happens if you happen to get tossed.
Yeah, I think that's getting too technical about the technicals. I think
perfect. We just had to clarify.
3, just 3.
Yeah.
So, yeah, Skeets has a Niang Tech and a Beverly Tech.
Yep.
That's your 2 points. My 3 is the Bobby Portis 3. You've got the Luka Tech to add to what was your first one?
Luka Tech.
Yeah. Another Luka. Yep. Yeah. Forgot about that Luka. Double Luka.
So it's 3-2-2.
Yes.
Did Portis get one on Friday, too?
I don't think so.
Ooh.
So then 2. 2-2-2.
No. 3 points for ejection.
Oh, 3 total points for ejection. Okay, I like it.
Perfect. He got ejected.
Yeah. All right, I love it.
No, I don't think he got an extra sec.
3-2-2.
Beverly got teed up again for, like you said, doing the too small.
Come on.
That's quick one. That was a quick one. Yeah. They were trying to keep it under wraps.
Yeah.
Didn't work.
No, it didn't. It actually did the opposite. Got more people pissed off. Whoops. All right, what a race here in our Instigator draft. I love it. 3-2-2. Let's go to Franz Wagner scoring 34, leading the Magic to their second straight rout of the Cavs. This series tied 2-2. The Magic held the Cavs scoreless for a second half stretch of almost 7 minutes. But Franz was the story from this one. And Orlando at home scoring, hitting shots. 34 points, like I said, 11 of 17 from the floor, 13 boards, 4 assists, 1 block, 0 turnovers in 40 minutes. And then you had Jonathan Isaac hitting some threes as well. 4 from him after he, or Jamal Mosley decided to go back to him off the bench. He's played well in that role, better in that role. They didn't even need a good Paolo game.
No, they did not.
And their defense is just like completely shutting off the Cavs, who had, what, 10 points in the third quarter?
Cavs haven't gotten to 100 in this series yet.
Yeah.
Didn't get to 90 in Orlando. 27% so far from 3 this series. That's not good.
No. And they're lucky it's 2-2. Yeah. I guess both teams are looking at it like that.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, it's like, we could have swept this by now.
So Orlando definitely has the momentum, but I don't feel very confident about them going into Cleveland and playing incredibly well. But that third quarter was great from Orlando. 37-10 on the scoreboard, 9 assists on 13 makes. 6 of those were 3, including 2 from Wendell Carter Jr., 2 from Jalen Suggs, and then Isaac hit 1, Franz hit 1. These are not necessarily knockdown shooters, and they were knocked down in that third quarter. Orlando also started forcing turnovers. 9 of Cleveland's 15 turnovers came in the second half. That was 12 points for Orlando. Easy buckets right there. Orlando had 11 first half turnovers. That kept the game close. They only turned it over 6 times in the second half, and that actually only turned into 3 Cleveland points. Did a great job getting back on defense, because the easiest baskets in this game are going to be fast breaks for either one of these teams. So I don't know. I don't know what I think going forward, because I kind of think Jamal Mosley overthought things. Coming into this series, switched up the starting lineup for basically no reason. Put Wendell Carter Jr. to the bench. Jonathan Isaac starts. That has switched since they went to Orlando. More importantly, Jalen Suggs is now guarding Donovan Mitchell.
Mm-hmm.
Because you don't need him on Darius Garland right now. I think it's kind of freed up the offense and tightened up the defense. Both of those moves. So definitely Orlando is in the lead right now. And Cleveland is going to have to get something from Darius Garland. This guy has been invisible in this series. Yeah. He scored the first 2 baskets for Cleveland in game 4 since then. Or after that, he went 3-for-9. Mm-hmm. And just, you don't even feel him out there.
No.
And he has the more favorable matchup at this point.
Yeah, and I think that's probably where the Cavs season hurt in a way, because he didn't get to play with Donovan Mitchell all that much to get used to it, because he was hurt along with Evan Mobley when they did their Donovan Mitchell at the point guard spot. And 3 shooters around him, including Dean Wade and Max Strus and George Niang, the guys who were just able to let it flow. So he didn't get comfortable. He just hasn't looked like himself at all. I am a little surprised that Donovan Mitchell just kind of went away in the third quarter of this game, because they were up 9 at half, and things were looking fine. But then Orlando, including Jalen Suggs, who was all over him, he was all over Donovan Mitchell, and that helped energize the rest of his defense. That didn't allow an offensive board to their bigs and Mobley and Jared Allen during that stretch, because they were missing every shot. I thought, okay, the big boys will go and grab one, but they could not, because the Magic's big boys were playing extremely well. And then at the other end, you mentioned all the shots that came from Suggs and Wendell Carter, who's chipping in. But they got physical, and they got the crowd going at home. So I guess it will be a different story in Cleveland. But so
they haven't scored in Cleveland yet. Yeah. Like, they were absolutely atrocious. Yeah. Will Banchero have a big game 5, or can Franz keep it going? I thought he looked horrible in Cleveland. I was ridiculing him on the show. Like, he's got no idea when he drives. He doesn't know what he's doing. He's just flipping it up. I mean, he's looking for fouls, and he sometimes will get a whistle. But he was awesome in Orlando. Like, so much more under control. He was obviously, you could tell he was like feeling himself. He dropped Niang at one point after that spin move and score, and he's pointing at him. And you got the entire Magic bench pointing at Niang. And I'm like, yeah, come on, Niang, get angry. Go punch somebody. I need the points in the instigator draft. But yeah, we'll just see which team, this series hasn't started, is what I'm getting at.
That's right.
Until the road team wins, the series hasn't started. So who knows what to expect. But it's going to be generally going to be a slogfest. With these squads and how they go about it. Their defense is good, on both sides for the most part. And offensively, they struggle at times. I'm oddly liking this series at times. I liked at least that the Magic got back into it here.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, and who knows what to expect. Final one, just quickly. Celtics lead wire to wire in Miami. Roll past the Heat, 104-84. This is what we expected, a little bounce back game after that game 2 loss. And Porzingis, after an awful game 2, 18 points, 5 boards, 2 blocks, 3 of 5 from deep. I thought the Celtics made a pretty active effort to like get him involved early and often, and he bounced back, and they just locked in defensively too. Like, really sort of took out Tyler Hero, who had 14 assists in game 2, and He only had 2 assists in this game and shot 5 of 16.
Yeah, the Heat were trying to open up those three-point shooters with a lot of screens, but the Celtics were fighting through them. They were ready. And seeing Jason Tatum guard Tyler Hero at times was refreshing and something that you want your best player to be able to do. So that's got to be an inspiration for their team. And they kept getting points after points after forcing the Heat to turn it over. They had 19 points off turnovers in the first half.
Yeah.
So yeah, they turned those 23 threes for the Heat in game number 3 to just 9. In game number 4. So that was a big
game 3.
Big, yeah, sorry, but yeah, I took a chance.
I took a chance.
Yeah, I took a chance there. It didn't feel right saying game 3. But yeah, they also, why would I take a chance when I knew this here that Kristaps Porzingis has been awesome in games 1 and games 3 now. Confident Porzingis was back. He was just ripping 3-point attempts in game 1. He ripped 8 from deep. He just was feeling good. 18 points, and then he just made one shot in game 2, and then he was back. He scored those first 8 points and had 18 overall, 2 steals and a block. Also, the Derek White show. I thought Derek White was just good. In that second quarter when he had 12 points over that 4-minute stretch where he was just going in for that beautiful put-back dunk on a free throw. He had a great game. Everything. You know, that's this team. With Jason Tatum and Jaylen Brown, you just need guys to fill in, and Derek White fills in, and Porzingis was great. This was a game I enjoyed too, even though it was a spanker, because you got that interview from Jimmy Butler in the middle of the first quarter. What are we watching here? Where do you get an interview? Obviously, he's not playing, so it was different, but yeah. Chris Haynes interviewing him, and then Jaylen Brown got interviewed at the end of the first quarter. I mean, it felt like a different sport. It feels like, it's like the F1, or no, F1 doesn't interview drivers, but it just felt like
they talk to them in the car. I mean,
yeah, that's true.
They're always wired up.
Yeah, it just felt like
box,
it was
box. Box. That's all they say. Box. That's my tires are going, Bono. That's my Lewis Hamilton.
That was good.
Beantown boys locked in early here. They let up 3 points in the first 6.5 minutes of this game. The Heat had 12 points at the end of the first quarter. I mean, they only scored 84 points. That's the fewest in a game all season. So yeah, Beantown boys got to it defensively, really more committed to taking away the three-pointers, cutting off Tyler Hero, and what we expected them to do here after that game 2 loss. But they're only up 2-1.
It's only 2-1.
It's only 2-1.
That's right.
But they got game 4 tonight. All right, we did it all. Any other thoughts? Any other plays? Any other random moments from any of those games that you wanted to touch on? No, we did it all.
Well, there's notes. There's plenty of notes. I will just say there, at the end of the third quarter in the Boston-Miami game, no interview. No Eric Spoelstra interview. I assume he was asked.
Because they're getting crushed.
They're getting smacked.
Yeah.
Did he even get asked? I think the rule is, we have talked about this before, if they're plus 25, you don't do an interview.
I think so, yeah.
Because why would you even ask him? What are you going to ask him? What the hell are you guys doing? Why are you down? what is the question?
Yeah. No,
I don't know.
Doing.
You don't talk to him at that point. Yeah. I mean, we shouldn't even be talking to them at all, because we're not really getting much usually. But yeah, you just pass on that one. I was happy for this blowout because it was like, oh, okay, here's one half. We don't really have to focus on all that much on the Saturday there. All right, let's, before we go, get to Tweet of the Night.
Tweet of the Night. Wow.
Well, Tweet of the Night comes from at Highlight Her. And you see Trey Kirby rocking the jersey here. Candace Parker retires after 16 seasons. 3-time WNBA champion. 2-time WNBA MVP. 7-time WNBA All-Star. Won Finals MVP. Was Rookie of the Year. I mean, what a career, as they add there on the tweet. You could also add 2-time NCAA champion. 2-time Olympic gold medalist. And Candace did have a big caption on Instagram that said, I'm retiring. I promised I'd never cheat the game and that I'd leave it in a better place than I came into it. The competitor in me always wants one more, but it's my time. My heart and body knew, but I needed to give my mind some time to accept it. And then a lot more to say. It was a really great post. But Candace Parker, one of the GOATs.
That's my GOAT right there.
That's your GOAT,
that's
for
my
sure.
My GOAT, for sure. Got me into women's basketball. She was, I guess, probably playing in high school when I was in college, and her high school was like 5-minute drive from her college, and she was dunking in high school. Incredible stuff. She won the dunk contest when she was in high school over Josh Smith and J.R. Smith. Unbelievable.
Holy crap.
That's amazing.
I mean, grading on a curve, if we're being
honest. Of course. Sure.
But still, very, very cool. She brought a title to Chicago, first one. First basketball title since 1998 in 2021, and she was just an incredible player to watch. Too bad her career is kind of ending on an injury that she suffered with the Aces last season. I'm sure she would have liked to go out contributing to the title that they won last season, but just means we're going to be listening to her on broadcast, and she's great as an analyst as well.
She played for a long time. You know, when she wrote in the caption, "I'm grateful that for 16 years I played a game for a living, and despite all the injuries, I hooped." She played, you know, every single time, fighting through all those injuries. And the caption was great. Also, first woman to dunk in an NCAA game. So that's pretty cool. She didn't say that. I had to throw that in there. But the part that I found so interesting, she didn't want to say she was retiring before the season to have, you know, all the accolades and all that, everybody giving her an honor. She just wanted to be humble about it. Tim Duncan-esh, you know, that type of thing. And then this part, when she mentions her future, that she said, "I'm a businessman, not a businessman. This is the beginning. I'm attacking business, private equity, ownership. I will own both an NBA team and WNBA team." I just dropped my phone. You're going to own an NBA team and a WNBA team? Wow.
Should probably be a part of it.
She didn't write that for no reason.
Nope.
She's got a plan.
Got a plan.
So cool to see.
Candace Parker, one of the greats. We'll call it there. Long show. Obviously, a ton to talk about. We'll be back tomorrow morning at 10 a.m. Eastern. Three games on tonight. Celtics try and take a 3-1 lead over the Heat. And the Thunder and Nuggets look to close out their respective series. We'll see if OKC can sweep the Pels, and we'll see if the Nuggets can take care of the Lakers in five. We'll be talking about them regardless of what happens, so join us at 10 a.m. Eastern. Hit the like button, subscribe. Podcast listeners, 5-star ratings and reviews. Till then, Clipper Bros.
You heard it here first. Have a great time. Turn up. Love you guys. Awesome.
Thanks for joining us, and remember, happy Monday. Hope it's a great Monday.
Brace the day, people.